Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, Matt Moore, live from San Antonio. How's it going?
I am on I-35 as we speak, and we're doing this by phone, so people are always complaining that your audio quality's not good enough. Why isn't your audio quality better? You can just stick on this one for a while.
Yeah, how you like us now? Skype call. Skype to the phone.
It's hot in Texas, which I very much like, because I've been in Colorado. It was cold for like 8 months, so I'm pretty pleased with that. I love being in Texas, because I've lived here for 4 years. I'm standing between Austin and San Antonio, and going to my favorite places for food. And they upgraded my rental car. I'm driving a Dodge Avenger, which just makes me a black Dodge Avenger.
Wow.
I'm thinking about naming various things of mine the Black Avenger.
Yeah, that's a good upgrade.
I think about renaming Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes is no longer the Black Hawk, but he's the Black Avenger.
Okay, I could deal with that. He's certainly avenged quite a bit in the last round. You know who didn't avenge anything? Those New York Knicks.
They did not avenge a damn thing. Do we want to like talk about this in like calm and rational terms, or do you just want me to make fun of the Knicks for like 10 minutes? I can definitely do that after all the crap I took from Knicks fans.
I'm going to let you make fun of the Knicks for a little bit. I might chime in here and there, but we'll do that, and then we'll get to the conference finals.
You know, I will tell you, there are so many great Knicks fans. I'm not being sarcastic. Seth Rosenthal posting and toasting all the guys over there, all the writers for Knicker Blogger, including Bob Saeda on Twitter, and real name is Robert Sellerman, and Mike Carrillo, and J.P. Kevin, and Jared Dubin. All the Knicks fans, many of the Knicks fans I know on Twitter are great, and they had realistic expectations, and they know, like, this is the team that we have, and it's not great, but we'll see how it goes, and they got excited about this year because they were winning, but they always kind of had, like, a realistic sense. But here's the thing, and we found this out. Eventually, you cannot have a team that is built this way that doesn't have secondary options. You cannot construct a team that way. If they played like they did in November the entire year, then I would have bought it. They did. They played like it for 2 months, and then they went back to the same stuff they always do, and they went to it a little bit more in the playoffs, but a lot of it was that they couldn't really change what they were doing because they hadn't done anything else. This is who they are. They're a team that gives Melo the ball and watches him jab step and watches him shoot contested jumpers, and Melo honestly played a really good series. He really honestly did. I thought he was really good for most of game six, honestly. He was really good.
Yeah, I thought with Melo, considering the crap that they were throwing out there in terms of like schemes and the way they were attacking, maybe he's part of the problem with that and the reason they did it, but considering the environment, I thought he played pretty well.
And O.J. Smith. Just, he got the pipe all right.
Yeah, heck of an end to the season. He had a good season.
He had a good 2 months. He had a really great November and an absolutely fantastic April.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me on Twitter, "What happened to the Knicks?" And I just responded with May. That's it.
Yep.
Just May happened. I am not falling for it next year, by the way. When they go on a tear in April, you remind me of this. You play this back for me and make sure I don't buy into their April hijinks. Because I could not forgive myself for taking them over the Pacers. I knew the Pacers were a better team. I knew they had a better construct. I knew their defensive schemes. I liked so many of their players and the way that their roster is built. And I just got suckered into, well, yeah, but the Knicks hit so many tough shots. Isn't that what's going to happen? I feel like an idiot for not selecting the Pacers.
Why
can't I get over it?
I am never one to toot my own horn. But yeah. There is only one person on CBSSports.com who picked the Pacers.
Only one. So, but I just thought about this. For anybody else, this year was like a great year. For most franchises, this was a great year for the Knicks. Like, if they're the Bucks, it was a fantastic season. If they're the Bobcats, they'd be riding in the streets. It was so good. But they're the Knicks, and they come with higher expectations. And they built themselves as a championship contender based around the idea that Melo was going to carry them there. And maybe he can. You know, it's impossible from a lot of, not possible, it's highly improbable from most analysts' perspective because of the hijinks that would have to go on with the cap. One guy annoyingly keeps sending me over and over a post he wrote that outlines how they can do it. I don't think it, it will happen or could happen. But I do think that Chris Paul is really the answer for everything that the Knicks want to do. They need somebody that's got the balls.
Oh, so all they need is the best point guard in the world, and they'll fix it.
Yep, that's all that they need. If they could just get Chris Paul, you know, to add to Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler, and everybody else they have on their team, and they'll be in good shape.
If before we move on to the conference finals, is it fair to say that the Knicks did as well as they could because of the injuries to Tyson Chandler and the rest of the team? I mean, they didn't have their full complement of players, and not that everyone else did. I mean, the Pacers were without Danny Granger. You know, they had George Hill missed a game with a concussion. Like, everyone goes through injuries. But I would say that Tyson Chandler not being able to be himself definitely made it seem like they probably maxed out where they could.
Well, Tyson was going to help them defensively, and the problem wasn't defense. The problem was offense.
Yeah, but he's so good. He's so good at spacing the floor and running the pick and roll when he's healthy.
They don't run it anyway when he's healthy.
But if they had.
But if he was healthy and had they run it, then yeah.
Maybe he adds a three-point shot next year, and everything gets worked out.
And everything gets fixed. How much do you blame Mike Woodson? That's a big question for people.
I blame him quite a bit because it just seemed like the attack was really bad. Like, their game plan throughout the series against the best defensive team in the league wasn't a good one. I mean, they just didn't do enough motion. I don't know how much of that is two guys killing ball movement. I don't know how much of that is a team just saying, hey, let's throw it into these guys and let them do what they're supposed to do. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But I think Mike Woodson should get some heat. I don't think it makes him a bad coach. I don't think it takes away from what he did this season as a coach. And I don't think he should be fired, but he should take a little heat for that.
The other thing is, I feel like he was hired specifically because he would give Melo what he wanted. He gave Melo largely what he wanted, and now you have to figure out something else. They expect him to come up with new ideas. And the problem is, if you're going to try to come up with new ideas in the playoffs, it just means that you're shook. Like, usually when you try to go something drastic and do, it's a bad sign, and it was a bad sign for them, and not what they needed. It really, you know, they hurt them when they started to get away from that in games. A 3-4 run in Indiana. That was not a good situation for them. So how do you feel about the Pacers going up against Miami?
I just posted the preview, CBSSports.com, for the Eastern Conference Finals. And looking at it, like, I really do like the Pacers' chances. Now, I would never pick them in the series, and I picked the Heat in six. But if you look at it, I mean, the way they played in the season series, and I'm not big on season series, but the Heat shot the ball really well against them, 48% from the field, 42% from three-point range against the best defensive three-point defending team, that was awkward, in the league. Where the Pacers beat them was with pace and with offensive rebounding. I mean, they just owned the boards, completely dominated them on the boards, which is what you're supposed to do. They slowed the game down, only gave up 4 fast break points a game. You know, that all sounds like a recipe for success. However, I don't really believe that the Heat did everything they're going to do in this series during their matchup in the regular season. I mean, we saw that from Spoelstra last year. He just holds stuff back. Tom Haberstroh has a great post on ESPN Insider about their end-of-game lineup that they haven't used in the playoffs yet, which is surprising, of LeBron, Wade, Ray Allen, Shane Battier, and Chris Bosh, and how that's their secret lineup to kind of spread everything out and still play well defensively. I think that's what we'll see, and I think we'll see them make the same adjustments they made against the Bulls in 2011. I think we'll see them make the same adjustments they made against the Pacers last year, even when Bosh was out. I think they'll play really good defense. I think they'll rebound as a team, and I think they'll survive it, but I don't think it's going to be this series where they just roll over their opponent. I think a lot of people seem to just be kind of discounting the Pacers. I really think this Pacers team can put up a good fight. They just seem like they're one wing score away.
I feel the same way about both conference finals, where do I think that one team will win? Yes. Would it shock me if the other team won? No. I think that these are four very, very, just four great teams.
Yeah.
Not maybe historically, but in the context of the season, these are four really great teams. I love what all of them do individually. I think the matchups can really bounce either way. Would it surprise me if the Heat swept them? No, because the Miami Heat are an exceptional team.
They're really good. I think that the thing with the Pacers is, you know, the New York Knicks used the three-point ball so much this year, and they took that away from them. And the Heat used the three a lot, but they only used the three mostly from the corners. I mean, Batty and Ray Allen will hit, you know, wing threes every once in a while, and Chalmers too. But really, they try to get to that corner, and the Pacers take that away really well.
I went down the rosters to think about it just from a talent perspective, because the bench for the Pacers is so bad. I was like, well, okay, obviously the Heat have an advantage in the bench.
Yeah.
So let's look at it, like, the rest of it, and I'm like, well, I obviously want George Hill over Mario Chalmers. I want Dwayne Wade over Lance Stephenson, despite how great Lance Stephenson has played in the playoffs. There's too much of a gap even with Wade hanging up. I obviously want LeBron over Paul George. So, with no insult to Paul George, it's LeBron.
Yeah.
I obviously want David West over Shane Battier, because that's not like a great matchup, or Don Bagwell, which either one. And then I think Hibbert and Bosch are kind of a wash based off of what they do, because Bosch is going to hit shots and going to create, because he's a really good player that understands his role in this offense now and is able to produce. And Roy Hibbert is one of the top five, top three best centers in the league.
Yeah.
So, I think it's that there is a case to be made that they can make a push. I think the Heat and six too, because I really do think these two teams are. I think the Pacers are going to bring the fight to them. I think it's going to be very tough. But I also think that Miami is very much expecting it. That's one thing I like about the Miami team. They're unlike maybe some of the Laker teams of prior years, really the last decade. They don't get caught up too much in themselves. They really are aware of how good these other teams are.
Right.
I think a lot of that's because of the 2011 series taught them so much in the finals about how tough they can be. But they really, they respect Indiana. They know that they're coming, and it's going to be, I think, a really competitive series. Man, that Vogel-LeBron stuff is stupid.
Oh, it's so stupid.
So dumb.
It's really dumb. I mean, a reporter baited LeBron by misrepresenting a quote. And it's not even that he said, oh, Vogel said that you guys are just another team. He said Vogel kept saying you guys, like, that he said it multiple times. Like, none of that was true. And, of course, LeBron, like, does LeBron know what Vogel said? No, he's going to trust what the reporter is saying, and then he's going to react to it, and he gets pissed off and offended. And then Vogel is just like, nope, sorry, sports world, that's not what I said.
Good backer, and it makes you mad, because it's like, this is how coaches get to hate us.
Yeah.
Like, this is why coaches wind up being angry and not wanting to talk to people like you and I, because supporters do this crap, and we're like, no, just don't do that, man. Just don't lie. Like, it's not worth the quote.
Right.
Why not?
I did a brief moment in my head of stupidity where he says, like, sorry, sports world, not going to play this game, basically. And I was like, yeah, way to stick it to him. I was like, oh, wait, I'm going to go cover him for the next two games. He's not going to give me anything.
Nothing.
I'm part of that sports world now.
It was funny. After the Western Conference Finals Game 1, which I covered, which, by the way, the AT&T Center is a labyrinth. It's an absolute labyrinth. So it's like that movie. There should be, like, the orange thing tossing their heads around.
Is there a point where there are upside-down staircases heading to the media room?
That's what it feels like, man. I got lost five times, and the security guys get mad. They're like, you're not supposed to be back. I'm like, I don't know where this is. Where am I? What's happening?
What are the odds you actually make it to Memphis and you don't just end up lost somewhere in the AT&T Center forever?
I wind up as a golem of the AT&T Center. So, by the way, anecdote two, before we get to the game, this is more interesting than the game wound up being. The worst time for you to possibly get a headache when you have no headache medicine with you is during introductions of the Western Conference Finals.
Yep.
I had a headache so bad when I got back to my hotel last night, I almost threw up. Like, I had to hold myself up to keep myself from hurling.
Oh.
It was bad. I have never had a headache maybe ever in my life that badly, and I had a concussion once. Like, it was poor. Because part of me was like, well, surely it won't be as loud as most NBA games are. I mean, it's San Antonio. It's only there to be black and rap music. Nope, I got, like, full-on, I got Guns N' Roses at, like, 700,000 decibels. So,
at least you can get a headache and have it prolonged from all of your favorite 90s music, because that's all they play.
It was really kind of like like that. It was a weird experience. The crowd was better than I've seen it be in San Antonio before, so that was good.
If they lose, if they lose a game, does the DJ, does the in arena DJ play like Blind Melon or something?
It's like Allison James down in a hole by Soundgarden. I had a lot of people asking yesterday. Sports fans really want me to be like cocky about this series, and I'm always confused because I'm like, you realize I thought there was no chance they would beat the Spurs in 2011, and I always predict them to lose every series.
Right.
Like, I picked them to win this one, which is what they get blown out in game one. Like, they jinxed them bad. I tried to go for the reverse jinx.
Yeah.
To, like, fight it out, and it didn't work at all. I picked them both in the game and for the series yesterday, and then they got completely destroyed. But, you know, everyone's like, oh, but what do you think about that, smart man? And I'm like, Spurs are really good.
I was surprised.
And the Grizzlies played like crap.
Yeah, I was surprised at how easily they took advantage of the Grizzlies' aggressiveness on defense. Like, it makes sense, but I just didn't expect that. I expected the Grizzlies to kind of beat them up a little bit, and the Spurs were just one step ahead with their passing throughout.
You and I talk about strategic adjustments a lot, and it's because I think that's one of the most fun things to talk about in basketball. There is a point, though, and I talked to Marc Gasol today at practice, and he was saying, he's like, look, after the game, we thought, wow, we really overhelped. And there was still a lot of that going on. Like, Zach Randolph talked a lot about that. A lot of the guys are talking about how they just helped off too much and they've got to stay home. But Gasol was saying, look, you know, if a guy is driving to the hoop and he's there's nobody there to stop him, you're going to help off. You should help off. That's your job to help off. I can't sit there and tell a corner guy not to help off if a guy's going to get a layup.
Right.
But at that point, we're already screwed because they've got two options. And they talked about how the bigs have got to do a much better job and what they're going to do. I think we're going to see a drastic change in the Memphis' defensive principles in game two regarding the pick and roll. I think we're going to see a lot of switches. I think that's dangerous, but they've almost have to because they can't risk another three-point performance in game one.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right call because the way their system works now, I think it can work. They just, you know, you've got to hedge a little bit better. You have to rotate quicker. You have to keep the offense pushed out. And I know we're talking about stopping 3-point shots, but you can't let the dribble penetration get in. I mean, they had 6 threes off of dribble penetration in that game, or 6 made threes, and it was just from Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili getting into the middle of the floor, which can't happen. So you have to cut that off with your bigs. But if you switch everything, this isn't a team that can really burn you that easily when you switch stuff. I mean, Tony Parker will destroy you if you switch out on him and put a big on him. Like even Marc Gasol, as much as I love his defense on the perimeter, like I just don't think that's a matchup you want 15 times during the game.
You never want Tony Parker on big.
Right. You know, if you get an awkward switch to Kawhi Leonard on the perimeter, or Danny Green, or Matt Bonner, or Gary Neal, those guys can have the advantage in certain situations. But I don't know that that's something where they're comfortable attacking every time like that. So I think it's something where you end up pushing them out away from the basket, away from the spots where they're comfortable, which is really kind of what you have to do against the Spurs.
The big key, part of what Gasol talked about today was, if they're going to switch, the big is going to have to show so hard on Parker and try and deter him into giving the ball up. As he turns the corner, okay, then now you're bringing help, and now we're in the same situation again. But that's what you almost have to do. Conley and Hollins and Gasol all talked about Sunday after the game. One interesting wrinkle, Bonner comes into the game, and I say on Twitter, I'm like, they better get Darrell Arthur absolutely going at him every single time.
Yeah.
And people are like, are you insane? Vivo's got this awesome matchup. Why would you go to Darrell Arthur? And I kept saying that in 2011, this was a big part of what they did. They kept Bonner off the floor because they went at him defensively every single time. They just hammered him to where Popovich couldn't afford to leave him out there anymore. Now, I was talking to the Spurs bloggers today. Bonner has honestly improved. For a guy his age, the work he's done to get better on the defensive end in the last 2 years amazes me.
Yeah.
Like, I would not expect a guy to be able to do that, but he has. At the same time, I still think you have to attach him as much as possible because you need to, you're like, I just want Tiago Splitter to want blood on the floor all the time. I want Tiago Splitter on the floor all the time.
Yeah.
Because you can't live with a pick and pop with Bonner because there's literally nothing you can do. The bigs can't just stay home because then you've got Parker and what is essentially a, you know, 4-on-3.5 situation with the guard in a bad position coming off of the pick, and it causes a lot of problems. So I think that we're going to see some of the adjustments there. Would I be shocked if the Spurs blew them out in game two? No. I wouldn't. I don't expect for San Antonio to win this series easily because of what I've seen from Memphis and just that I don't necessarily hate all the matchups. But it wouldn't. It would not surprise me just because the Spurs are so good.
Yeah.
Nothing in the series is going to surprise me. It's just going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think that's why I'm so excited to really. And honestly, I'm excited to be here to be covering it live. It's really pretty awesome to be here, even though I'm terrified I'm going to get lost and wind up living in a closet for the rest of my life.
Which is very much possible. I think the thing is that you could expect a similar start to the series as we saw with Clippers Grizzlies, where the Grizzlies just look a little uncomfortable. I know the second game that, you know, it was very close. It came down to a Chris Paul game winner. But it felt like the Clippers were in control for most of that game, at least the way I remember it. And then the Grizzlies went home. They were able to reset. And they kind of fell back into their groove of what they like to do. They got Z-Bo going. Marc Gasol was great. Conley was great. Role players stepped up. I think if we have that kind of a series, you know, the Grizzlies' goal in this is to be tied 2-2 after four. I mean, obviously it would be great if they were up 3-1, but realistically that should be your goal if you're the away team, is just have it even at 2-2 after four and then try to, you know, and then it's a best 2 out of 3 series that you try to steal a game on the road. But I don't think if the Grizzlies lose game two tomorrow that it's going to be some just horrible thing for them. I mean, it's not ideal to lose game two, but they're not out of the series if it happens.
They were really pissed off about game one. I'll say this. If the same thing that happened in game one happens in game two, the Grizzlies are going to get very emotionally disturbed because they're more so than they already are as a group. Because they, I mean, they were, you know, Conley says, like, we were mad. We're very angry and disappointed. Z-Bo was just, Z-Bo came in the locker room and the first thing he says was, like, he apologized to his teammates. Apparently, it's like a pretty emotional scene. And they've all been, they were like, no, man, like, look, we got to get you the ball. Like, we got to figure out how to get around the defense to get you the ball. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond. Memphis has become the more emotional team. They've got to respond with a little more intensity. So the Spurs are just doing what they do, clockwork and robotics. So we're going to have to see how that responds. It's been really interesting, though. It's also fascinating to watch the Spurs as a media machine because they are, one, they're impossible. And, like, everyone here is just like, trying to cover this team is painful. Versus the Grizzlies, who are just like, you want to talk to me? you know, they also, all the Grizzlies all talked about this. They were bringing a lot, and you did a great breakdown of what they did to create those open threes and to signing Z-Bo as well. And in Z-Bo breakdown, he talked about how, like, they're bringing guys from the corners. And there is this perception that Memphis, they're like, well, Memphis doesn't have anybody that can do that, so what are they possibly going to do? And this goes back to what you actually talked about with the Warriors, which is like, it's the playoff and any NBA players will hit open shots.
Yeah.
Once Poindexter can hit that shot, Jared Bayless can hit that shot.
Absolutely.
They do have guys that can do it. They need them to step up, and that's how you win playoff series when you're the underdog.
Absolutely.
And that's what really Memphis is going to have to rely on.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis doesn't have consistent outside shooters, but they have guys that are good enough to make them pay if you give them open looks in the corner, and they just have to find a way to get the ball there crisply and within the flow of what the Spurs can't defend, which that's kind of how you beat the Spurs, is they are so good, you know, on both ends, but there are dead zones for them on both sides of the ball, and you just have to find a way to consistently get into those to where you disrupt that rhythm that they're so good at obtaining.
Well, let me make this one short because I'm on the road and you're getting ready to be on the road. You're going to Miami.
I will be in the city of Will Smith. He once had a Miami song. That's fantastic. I recommend you downloading it for you kids because I'm pretty sure it happened before you were born. I will be in Miami tomorrow and come back Saturday. There will not be a podcast tomorrow. I just ran out of time and couldn't get one scheduled for today, and I won't have time to record it in the morning. You're going to be busy with game stuff. I'm really excited about covering a playoff game for the first time. It, weird thing about covering the Wolves and the Kings like I have in my career, they weren't in the playoffs any of those years.
There's a high level of correlation between me covering the Kings and the Timberwolves and me not covering the playoffs.
Yeah, it's weird how that works out. So I'm excited. I'll be at my first playoff game since 2004 when the Timberwolves were in Sacramento. And I'm really excited. And hope that our good friend and partner, Royce Young, and his family and friends are safe. We hope all of Oklahoma City is able to somehow get through the tough weather that has just, you know, really hit their city in a horrible way. And, you know, thoughts and prayers to everybody.
Yeah, we're thinking about them. I hate tornadoes. I hate them. I lived in the Midwest for so many years, and when you see the damage, it shocks people when they experience it for the first time to see just how powerful these things are and how terrifying it is. So we're thinking of everybody, and hope they're out there. And check back Wednesday, maybe Thursday for the podcast, or whenever we get a chance to get another one in.
Yeah, we will definitely have a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I guarantee that. Thanks, Matt.